Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at AccelerateShares.com.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Klimochko, and my co-host, Mike Kesslering. And on today's podcast, we welcome special guest Tom Tomlinson, CEO of Holly, the largest and fastest growing platform in the enthusiast-branded performance automotive aftermarket category. Holly recently announced a business combination with SPAC Empower that valued the company at $1.55 billion. On the podcast, Tom discusses how one of the nation's oldest companies, tracing its roots to 1903, has evolved over time, Holly's strategy and growth profile under private equity ownership and the transition to a public listing, its focus on automotive enthusiasts and how that is driving DTC revenue growth, Holly's approach to acquisitions, the case for Holly's stock, and more. Point of disclosure, we are long Empower shares in the Accelerate Arbitrage Fund ETF. And with that said, please enjoy our conversation with Tom Tomlinson, CEO of Holly. Welcome, Tom, to the Absolute Return Podcast. Excited to have a real car guy on the show today. Obviously, everyone likes cars, especially some of the cars and some of the stuff that the parts you make at Holly apply to. And getting into the company, I find the story pretty fascinating just because it's one of the oldest businesses that I think I've ever heard of, being founded in 1903. So a real classic company that's been around for many, many cycles. I'm sure it's been owned by a number of companies, various entities, private equity firms as well. Could you walk us through a quick history of the company and how it's developed over the years?
Sure. Like you said, founded in 1903 by brothers George and Earl Holly. And, you know, they were two really innovative guys. They actually started out building some cars and some motorcycles. They taught themselves how to basically cast and machine metal and build their own engines. And so innovative guys, and that's really one of the traditions that we've focused on continuing here. It's been a big part of the most recent renaissance of Holly. As the story goes, Henry Ford came to them and said, you know what, I'm going to build this great car. You guys make great carburetors. Why don't you supply my carburetors? So the company really started out supplying carburetors to Henry Ford. We provide parts to Ford Racing, but we've actually then continued as a supplier all these years. So, you know, when you look at the company over time, I mean, just an amazing history. More than 50%, I'm told, of the vehicles used in World War II were used Holly carburetors, as an example. And then some of the baddest muscle cars of the 60s and 70s also had Holly carburetors. In fact, I got to tour Jay Leno's collection.
Oh, nice.
And he actually had a PT boat engine there, you know, in his one of his buildings. And it was in this, you know, beautiful glass enclosure. And it had a Holly carb on it. So it was pretty cool to see that. But, you know, those are the roots. I've actually been with the company for 18 years. I started out as chief financial officer and then became CEO in December of 2009. And we really refocused the business on two things, on the performance automotive aftermarket, and then also on our, you know, on our enthusiast consumers. That was the number one person in the equation for us. When we took the reins of the business in that 2009 timeframe, we had literally two engineers. Today, we've grown that to over 135 engineers. Hmm. And, you know, with just a major focus on developing products that our, you know, enthusiast consumers love to put on their cars and trucks.
It's really interesting to note how the company is changed and transitioned, evolved over the 18 years that you've been with the company. I was wondering how this has related to, you know, the various different ownership structures you've been to, whether it be, you know, owned by a conglomerate, private equity, and now going to be a public company. Does that affect, you know, these various transitions and how the company is managed?
I think it does, certainly. Prior to the time I joined the company, it was owned by a conglomerate. But ever since I've been with the company so far, it's basically been private equity investors. And, early on, you know, we moved through a series of investors that had differing objectives and perhaps didn't understand the company's roots. And we really took the company back to, again, you know, focusing on where our brands are known. That's performance automotive aftermarket parts, and then also in building relationships with our enthusiast consumers. We've had, and this really kind of naturally leads into the SPAC discussion. We took the reins in that 2010 timeframe, and company was growing rapidly. And what we found is that every few years we would need to go out and, you know, raise capital. And in the private equity world, that usually meant a transaction where basically almost 100% of your investors change over. And so you're in a cycle of getting to know a new group, you know, educating them on the company, melding your strategy with theirs. And we're very grateful. The last couple of sponsors that we've had have just been very, very good partners, very supportive of the company. And, with a good partner, it's helped us drive this growth. We've done quite a few acquisitions. A couple of them, at least in my logical construct, were transformational. But again, you know, after this few years, you're out in the market spending a lot of time raising capital. And so we were actually at that natural juncture in our development again, coming into 2021 and actually in 2020. And so we became aware of the SPAC phenomenon, and it was intriguing. And we looked into it. We started talking to SPACs. And I guess from our perspective, there are a couple things that we really liked about it. One was it seemed like a relatively quick and efficient way to take the company public. And, there are some upsides, like the ability to really, partner with someone and share, levels of information with them that I think it's hard to do in the context of an IPO. But also to partner with somebody who could help, I think, maybe ease our transition into life as a public company, but also had something meaningful to bring to the table in terms of consumer focus. And then one of the primary tools today that you use to reach consumers is a variety of digital tools. And so that's one of the things that we found in Empower. We were very excited after the initial discussion. And as our discussions have continued and we've met more and more of the folks at or around Empower, it's just been very exciting. And we have a great consumer engagement program. You know, we know a little bit about digital. We feel like we've been learning our way through this. And we see this as a great opportunity to really supercharge the growth of the company, to tap into the know-how, just on, really on the digital side especially, but also on the broader consumer side.
Go ahead. So to recap for our listeners, that SPAC transaction that you mentioned, merger with special purpose acquisition company Empower, the deal values Holly at $1.55 billion. Wondering if you could get into the weeds a little bit, more details on how exactly that transaction came about. Was this a fairly competitive process? Did you go, date a number of SPACs prior to marrying Empower, or was it fairly exclusive?
Yeah, we did. I like the way you put it. We did date a number of SPACs. Really had lots of discussions. And I have to say that very early on, we felt very aligned with the Empower folks. And you know, we thought it would be a great partnership that would let us really continue to grow the business and drive the growth. And so it was pretty competitive. And, when you look, I mean, from our perspective, once we started looking around in the public markets, there's quite a difference in the multiples, private versus public. And so, I mean, when I think of it in terms of our future investors, this looks like a very, very nice multiple to us. And, on the flip side of it, as a seller, it made sense in the context of and relative to what our primary investors could have gotten, focusing on a private transaction. So hopefully I said that coherently. But
no, that totally makes sense. And now you're moving from the private equity ownership model, which you have been basically your entire career at Holly. Traded between a number of private equity firms, and typically private equity firms they'll use a significant amount of leverage, debt, and looking to really kind of harvest the cash flows. However, I assume as you guys transition from private equity ownership to a public entity that's more so financed by equity capital, less reliant on debt, less transactional focused, how does that change the business model for the company? Are you more so focused on growth now as opposed to, harvesting those cash flows for the owner?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it will inevitably allow us to focus more on growth. We, you're right. I mean, clearly we have a long history of operating with a lot more leverage than we'll have after we close this transaction. So I mean, that'll be nice, but the reason that we really look forward to that, I think, is that it'll allow us to focus more of our time and effort, on driving the growth of the business. So, I mean, to us, that's exciting. And I guess I would say the other thing that I think is worth talking about, if you think back to our discussion a few minutes ago, we talked about being in this cycle of having to, having to go out and raise capital in the private market. And just a tremendous amount of management time has been dedicated to that over the years. And then even after you pick a partner, then it's getting them onboarded, helping them understand the company, melding your approach to their approach. And so so this is really exciting to us because it'll eliminate that side of it. And again, we'll be able to focus on growth. Now, we are picking up some of the additional activities, related to being a public company. But also, we're bringing on people that are skilled. We've got a chief financial officer, that we'll be bringing on here soon to bring that next level of public company experience to us. So, but net, we think it's going to be very much a positive, and it's going to allow us to focus on growth.
One aspect that I find compelling about Holly is the digital marketing and the engagement with your enthusiast customers. And I was wondering how this has dovetailed into the distribution of your products. Clearly, DTC, direct to customer, has been a high growth area for you guys. Is this a real focus of Holly on a go forward basis?
It definitely is. It started out for us. We realized that, as a family of brands, we needed to have these direct relationships with our consumers. And before we got serious about it, I mean, we frequently heard from consumers, indicating that they wanted to buy from us. And that is definitely a part of the strategy. It is the fastest growing part of our distribution. We think of that as one of the ways, direct to consumer is one of the ways we distribute our products. And it's also, obviously the highest margin for us. But the most important thing is understanding what our consumers want, building those relationships with consumers. And so selling to them directly is an important part of that. I don't know if you can hear that in the background.
Here. It sounds fast.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, as our enthusiasts go by, they want to let us know, they let me know they've got our louder exhaust system on their car. So I hear that quite a bit. But it actually, it's part of the fun.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Accelerate, one of Canada's most innovative and fastest-growing alternative investment solution providers, with a suite of institutional-caliber alternative ETFs for investors seeking diversification and long-term performance. The Accelerate Arbitrage Fund, symbol ARB on the TSX, is the world's first SPAC-focused ETF, with a diversified portfolio of SPAC and merger arbitrage opportunities in an easy-to-use, low-cost ETF. The Accelerate Arbitrage Fund ETF trades under the symbol ARB on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
One area that I'm focused on, because obviously the D2C, that channel, having a ton of growth in that channel for kind of on the e-commerce side, and then as well, I mean, the favorability of it being high margin, that all makes sense from a company perspective. And something else that caught my eye that you're doing that's fairly innovative is getting rid of the negotiated discounts as part of your selling program. Now, you're still able to have a significant amount of growth. I believe it was 2019 that you stopped that, but you were still able to generate strong demand and growth, despite not having kind of that industry practice of discounts.
Yeah.
How are you able to do that where competitors seem to very much rely on that?
Yeah. So this has definitely been a journey for us, and we made major changes to this, more than a decade ago, and for us, a lot of it was eliminating noise, and actually, this is very common in the industry, and most of the businesses we look at acquiring have some level of this, activity going on. From our standpoint, we really wanted to understand consumer demand for our product. And when you have a sales team that's out there individually negotiating orders, nobody can keep track of all that. And so, we want to understand, what the patterns are. If something's doing well, we want to see it, as quickly as we can. If something isn't going well, we want to see it as soon as we can. And for a number of years, we held on to a promotion that we did, and it was a mixed consumer promotion and reseller promotion. But after doing that for a number of years, we really just decided that was putting the same level of noise into the business or nearly the same level of noise as some of the discounting practices that we had eliminated earlier in our development. And so we did. 2019 was the first year we didn't do the reseller part of that promotion. And then we also had closed on a large acquisition in 2018, and we implemented this pricing model. We call it our disciplined pricing model in 2019. And they had been discounting heavily management teams use it to manage monthly earnings. And from our perspective, again, instead of pushing products out to distribution, we're all about creating demand for our products and to get that pull through distribution. And it has really worked for us. I mean, our top resellers, the resellers that, carry a broad sample of our product portfolio are, growing very nicely and growing with us.
So from a product perspective, many of these parts that you guys sell have been around for, over 100 years, starting out with the carburetors. But now the auto business is going through perhaps its biggest transition ever as, popular internal combustion engines over the next few decades will be seeing more and more electric vehicles as the, vehicles on the road slowly transition to becoming more and more electrified. I was wondering, Yeah, obviously, this presents a massive macro change for Holly. For example, you won't be hearing super loud cars going by as much, I assume, unless they create really loud electric engines. I don't know. But how are you guys managing the transition to electric vehicles on a go-forward basis?
Yeah, so there's a number of things there. One of the first things I want to respond to. Yes, we certainly have products in the product line that have been around for decades, which is actually a wonderful thing. And the engineering was all incurred years ago, and so we continue to sell those, and it's really great to have such long product life cycles. But there are really two ways that we grow at the highest level. And one of those is innovation, and that comes down to exciting new products. So if you look at our 2020 sales, 40% of the revenues in 2020 came from products that had been introduced within the last 5 years. And we have a very, very full new product pipeline. In the 2009-2010 timeframe, there really was no new product pipeline. Today, we have a very, very robust, very full new product pipeline. So, gets us to the EV question. And, we're actually very excited about electric vehicles. I began noticing this a few years ago. I don't know if you guys have seen, the internet just seems to be covered up with videos of Teslas blowing the doors off of everything out there. Lamborghinis, Ferraris, Corvettes, Camaros, on and on and on.
Ludicrous mode.
I'm sorry?
Ludicrous mode.
Ludicrous mode. Yeah, absolutely. And then now the plaid car is coming, which just absolutely incredible performance. So so a couple of years ago, I thought, this is coming. We just need to get familiar with it and experience it. Mm-hmm. And so I bought a Tesla Model 3 Performance, which I've actually been daily driving. And so we're actively developing products for those. And in fact, I have prototype parts on the car I drive every day. We really see two opportunities on the EV side. One, and this very much mirrors kind of the rest of the business. A lot of what we do is people that buy a later model car and want to modify it. And so one of the ways that we can serve enthusiasts of electric vehicles is to develop and sell products that that improve the performance of those OE vehicles. And so there are plenty of opportunities there. The other major opportunity we see is we really see a growing interest on the part of enthusiasts to convert internal combustion engines to electric power. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these are, classics that we humans love nostalgia. And so, the classic category is very important. But we're seeing it in some cars that we would classify as, modern and late model. And so a lot of what we do for classic vehicles today is we provide products that allow consumers to update them with modern technology. So electronic fuel injection being one. And, another example is modern drivetrain conversions are very, very popular with owners of classic vehicles. In fact, one of the categories we see, it's called a resto mod, which is a mashup of restoration and modification. Mm. And, updating those vehicles. I mean, look, if you have an electric car, you've experienced that, but probably if not, then you drive a modern vehicle that has, a high degree of electronic controls. And as we think about supporting these electronic fuel injection conversions and the modern powertrain conversions, over time, we've become experts in electronics. And so that gives us really, we think, a natural progression to provide consumers with cost-effective and easy-to-use electronic controls for their electric powertrain conversions.
And now a word from our sponsor, Accelerate, one of Canada's most innovative and fastest growing alternative investment solution providers. With a suite of institutional caliber alternative ETFs for investors seeking diversification and long-term performance, the Accelerate One Choice Alternative Portfolio ETF, symbol 1C, ONEC on the TSX, is Canada's first alternatives portfolio solution, providing exposure to 6 alternative asset classes, 10 alternative strategies, in one easy-to-use, one-choice ETF that charges a management fee of just 0.2%. The Accelerate One Choice Alternative Portfolio ETF trades under the symbol 1C, ONEC on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
So as well on the M&A side, you have been quite active as I believe you've completed, I believe, 8 acquisitions since 2014. You mentioned as well on the integration side that when you bring a new brand under your portfolio, that you'll implement disciplined pricing on the integration side. But yeah. Can you talk a little bit as well on both the identification of acquisition targets, how you go about that process and deciding sure. what to look at?
Sure. So the first thing I would say is we go out looking for brands and for products that will be appealing to our enthusiast consumers. It's not just a matter of bulking up. We're looking, we want something that we have a high degree of confidence is going to be additive to our overall product portfolio. And part of the way that we go about that is we really have this vision of offering a very complete journey to our enthusiasts. So if you're an enthusiast of, let's say, a Ford Mustang, we really would like to have all of the products necessary for an enthusiast to realize, you know, his or her vision of that perfect modified Mustang without having to send them to any of our competitors or to anyone else in the industry. And so as we look at acquisition targets, we think about, okay, how does it fit within, you know, that vision? And so filling out product categories allows us to help them through or serve them more during that journey. There are also businesses that have focused on platforms where maybe we don't have strength today. We have a fair amount of presence in domestic cars and trucks, you know, a lot of muscle cars, Mustang, Camaro, Challenger, Charger, F-150s, Silverados, Sierras. And then we also, through the APR and Dinan brands, have VW, Porsche, Audi, as well as Dinan. You know, we know that there are enthusiasts who are very passionate about Japanese vehicles, for an example. So, you know, we could add that type of vehicle. There are other platforms out there that we can just continue to add, and that informs, you know, this acquisition strategy. So the neat thing about the latter is that, you know, we're bringing more consumers into our fold and leveraging this consumer-focused infrastructure we're building, and that's very exciting to us.
It's certainly appealing to your enthusiast customers, and bringing them into your ecosystem makes sense. Now, I want to give you a platform to speak your case for Holly Stock to investors, obviously going through the merger with Empower, trading as EMPW on the stock exchange. When you're up in a newly minted public company, what is the elevator pitch for the stock? There's a lot of parts companies out there, auto companies. Why should they pay attention to Holly?
Well, gosh, I've never done an elevator speech before. So, well, I think maybe the first thing I would say is that when we look at it relative to the public markets, this looks like a very attractive price to us going in. And we're a growth company. We're very focused on growth. We grow through innovative, new product. We've made an incredible commitment to that, and we're driving, you know, thousands of new products every year from a release standpoint. So that's a big part of it. We've had great experience with M&A. You know, certainly that gives us more revenues and earnings, but we've also integrated them and driven great synergies. And so, you know, I look at that as exponentially, you know, growing the value of the company. I guess another way to look at it is whatever we pay for these acquisitions, it gives us the ability to leverage them down, you know, through capturing the synergies. And so, you know, we're all about creating value. We do that through growth in revenue and earnings. And, you know, I think the public markets are going to reward that over time. I haven't obviously focused in the public markets throughout the course of my career. I've been very, very focused on driving Holly forward. And, you know, when we think about Holly relative to where so much SPAC activity has been, we're pretty unique, you know, in that we actually have revenue and earnings and growth. And, you know, some of those things that I've come to understand makes us unique relative to a lot of the companies that have gone public via the SPAC vehicle.
Great. So I put you on the spot with respect to that elevator pitch prior to letting you go, Tom. I want to put you on the spot one more time.
Okay.
What would be your favorite car and why?
You know, out of all the questions you've asked me, that is probably the hardest. and I have to tell you, I just can't pick one. So I can talk about that a little bit. It tends to be, you know, whatever I'm working on at the moment.
Right.
But I really do like my Tesla Model 3 Performance. It is my daily driver. It's very, very fast. And, you know, with a busy life, not having to get gas is nice. Being able to enjoy the quiet is nice. So I love that. I in terms of late model vehicles, another vehicle I own, which is the polar opposite, is a Jeep Trackhawk. And that's 707 horsepower, supercharged, crazy crossover SUV, all-wheel drive. And, you know, they actually, if you look at them in the quarter mile, they actually run very close to the same time. The Tesla does it in virtual silence. The Jeep Trackhawk is loud and obnoxious. And when it shifts, you know, they throw a bunch of retard in the ignition and it blats out the exhaust, but it's a ball. And, you know, then I love classic vehicles, and I'll try to keep this high level, but, you know, muscle cars, Camaros, Mustangs, Challengers. I love resto mods because we're applying modern technology again to make those cars fun to drive. So I've got some older sports cars. And then, you know, just I don't know what it is about old pickups, but I love old pickups too. So that's the most concise answer I can give.
No doubt those were all great picks and certainly tough to choose between those. Now, where can investors find out more about Holly?
Well, what I would say is go to holly.com, and that's a great place to start. And you know, I'm sure there will be other ways over time, and you know, maybe we can check in with ICR for some more information on that.
Okay, great. Well, Tom, I'd like to thank you for coming on the Absolute Return podcast. A real blast having you on the show and learning about Holly's business and your background and future growth opportunities. And we wish you the best of luck once you become complete this merger with Empower and become a newly minted public company. So exciting stuff, certainly.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure. I always love to get the chance to talk about cars and about Holly.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and we'll wish you the best of luck. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty expressed or implied is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.